Michael Jordan did play a role with the owners, really as a liaison between the owners and the players, and getting the league through this week and reminding the owners about making sure that the owners are in a place where they're listening right now to players. He's the only one who knows what it means to be on both sides.
Last week's playoff stoppage over the police shooting of Jacob Blake set off the most intense conversations between players and owners in NBA history. And a familiar yet unexpected figure stepped into that fray, Michael Jordan. Today, Jackie McMullen reports on Michael Jordan's role as league mediator and how that fits with the activism of the only other man who can challenge Jordan's legacy, LeBron James. So does this mean we have to discuss the NBA's one true GOAT? I mean, of course. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, August 31st. This is ESPN Daily. Jackie McMullen, it's so good to have a Hall of Famer on ESPN Daily. Thank you for joining us.
You're silly. How are you, Pablo? I missed you.
Jackie McMullen is arguably the GOAT of NBA writers. You've been covering the NBA for decades, as well as anybody. And last week, we witnessed one of the biggest moments in sports history play out in real time as NBA players decided not to play on Wednesday and then on Thursday as well to protest racial injustice and this police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
The NBA and the NBPA today announced that in light of the Milwaukee Bucks' decision to not take the floor today for Game 5 against the Orlando Magic, today's three games, Milwaukee versus Orlando, Houston versus Oklahoma City, and the Lakers versus Portland, have been postponed.
So just from your vantage point, when did you realize that this was all going to be one of those history-altering moments?
Oh, well, the minute the Bucks didn't take the floor, Pablo, because I can't recall anything like this.
The Milwaukee Bucks are boycotting Game 5 of their series against the Orlando Magic.
The thing that surprised me was clearly the Orlando Magic, they were not in on this. They didn't get the memo. And so that was the one thing, I guess, that left the Bucks open to some criticism. They felt very strongly about this. George Hill's words the previous day broke my heart.
I mean, we can't do anything. First of all, we shouldn't even came to this damn place, to be honest.
And, you know, clearly you could see the hurt and the pain on his face. So I commend the Bucks for what they did. But the way they did it left them open to some, a little bit of discomfort, if you will, with the rest of the league and some of the other players.
Yeah, and that all came to a head in this meeting at 8 o'clock Eastern time that night, when the players all meet up, and meanwhile, we're outside the bubble, we're refreshing Twitter, we're trying to monitor all of the action, figure out the mystery, piece it all together. But those players end up meeting, and you referenced the discontent that had been percolating, Jackie. What's your sense of what happened in that particular meeting?
Well, there's definitely been conflicting reports, Pablo, about exactly what went down. We do know one thing. LeBron James left the meeting. We do know that. That happened. He's acknowledged that. Now, why did he leave that meeting? I think LeBron was one of the players that was unhappy with the Bucks making this decision without informing everybody else. Even more so, the thing that really bothered him was, what's your plan? Okay, you're not going to play, but what's the plan? Why the stoppage? What is the plan? And there, you know, the plan was being formulated. And I think that is where LeBron objected. Now there's been, as I said, multiple conflicting reports. One report said LeBron didn't say anything in the meeting. Another report suggested that the way he spoke to some of the younger players that didn't have the same gravitas as he did was very insulting and upsetting to them. Then there was yet another report that said LeBron was very forceful and said, you know, we want to all be unified, but until you are, I'm out. So maybe the truth is probably, like always, somewhere in between.
So, Jackie, there's this Rashomon experience, right? Everybody has a different vantage point. The truth is in question. But in all of this chaos, You reported something that was fascinating to me, because as George Hill is emerging as a leading voice, and as LeBron James is once again reaffirming his status as a leading voice, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, the GOAT on Mount Olympus by some estimations, he reaches out to Chris Paul, the president of the Players Union. Michael Jordan is not in the bubble, Jackie, but what was he trying to accomplish?
Michael is at an interesting point in his life, Pablo. And I think he understood, okay, this is very strong. I mean, he was in the league a long time and they dealt with a lot of different issues, some of them racial. And I think the fact that the players had not taken the floor, he understood the magnitude of that. And he reached out to Chris Paul to say, okay, help me understand. Let me go to these owners. I'm one of them, the only black majority owner in the league, of course. Tell me, how can I articulate for you what you want to say to them? And I think the message that he got from Chris, and he also talked at length with Russell Westbrook. And you know, these players still reach out, many of them, to Michael Jordan all the time. And the message that he got was, look, you guys are always so quick to tell us what to do. This time, we'd like you to listen instead of talk. Listen to our pain, feel our pain, understand our pain, and help us eradicate that pain by working with us for a solution. And I think that was the most powerful message that Michael Jordan was trying to convey.
So this is really eye-opening to me, because first off, I didn't realize, Jackie, that people still sought out Michael Jordan's counsel in private. What do guys want from MJ when they reach out to him lately?
I think what's happened with Michael Jordan is he became such a legend that some players didn't feel like they could approach him. And I think every chance he gets when he's around, especially through Nike, because I think Nike is a great place, a jumping off point for so many of these young players like Jason Tatum, of course, like Kemba Walker, who played for Michael, you know, played for Michael Jordan as a Charlotte Hornet. They start to realize he'll say to them, just like he said to a very young Kobe Bryant at that first All-Star game, if you need something, hit me up. And he meant it then and he means it now. Perfect person, Pablo, to be this conduit between these two groups, the owners and the players. He's the only one on earth that's been both, right? Think about that room he was in with those NBA owners. With the exception of Jeannie Buss, the only woman in there generally, the rest of these owners are privileged white men. And they don't understand their players as well as Michael Jordan did.
Michael Jordan, his history with politics does not make anyone think that he would be a leader in the world that the NBA is occupying right now. The last time we saw Michael Jordan, Jackie, it seems like America gathered around its television to watch him in this Last Dance docuseries that ran on ESPN, obviously. What we saw there, how does that inform, do you think, what Michael Jordan's approach is here?
I think he said it very clearly in that documentary while he was playing. And believe me, I saw it with my own eyes. When he was in it, Pablo, he was thinking about nothing else but basketball and winning. And as he said himself in that documentary, right or wrong, you can criticize me for that. That's how I approach my playing career. This is a different chapter in his life, Pablo. I find Michael Jordan to be far more reflective than he ever has been in the past. He is more forceful in fighting for black rights. Michael Jordan pledged, along with Nike and the Jordan brand, $100 million over the next 10 years for organizations that have to do with social justice and racial equality to causes like the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. There was an organization to do with young black girls, inner city black girls that he's supporting. This is important to him. He donated money to the Players Association, the Retired Players Association, to help them. Primarily, you know, what are they? I think 90-something percent people of color. So he is now a very wealthy man. I think it has made it one of his primary focuses to give back to the black community.
And the other thing, Jackie, that I see in all of this, I mean, the other Context for The Last Dance is that there was a time when everybody fully appreciated everything that Michael Jordan meant as an athlete. It was very clear how undisputed he was in terms of his greatness.
Yes.
Now, it is not so clear. Now, Michael Jordan is releasing this docuseries, The Last Dance, in part because I would think that kids today, they may be LeBron guys. They may be fans of the other GOAT in the conversation. And I'm curious for you, how much does LeBron James weigh on Michael Jordan when it comes to how he figures out how he strategizes around what he does in life?
I think I would tell you, Pablo, honestly, I don't think he thinks about this nearly as much as the rest of us do. I'm serious. I think in his mind, it's obvious that he's the best. Six straight finals, right? He goes to six finals, wins them all, is the MVP for all of them. What Michael Jordan will argue, and those who believe in Michael Jordan, is that Jordan has all these signature moments. You know, the shot over Craig Elo. Jordan.
Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Set the Cleveland Cavaliers!
The shot over Byron.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
All these moments of enormity. And I think the people who favor Jordan over LeBron would say LeBron doesn't have the same gravitas in his career. LeBron James has actually hit the most clutch shots in the postseason. Now, I think the difference is, you know, like the famous win when the Miami Heat beat the Spurs after they have the ropes up around the side of the arena because they're about to win the championship, and then Pop, you know, takes out Tim Duncan for defensive purposes and it all goes to hell. Well, who hit the big shot? Ray Allen.
Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining.
And so that's what the Jordan loyalists will point to.
Coming up, we'll talk about what else sets LeBron apart from MJ and explore what makes them two very particular breeds of goat.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Well, Jackie, leading into this meeting where Michael Jordan was a mediator of sorts, who would you say has been the leader in the NBA when it came to player protest and activism?
Oh, it's not even close. It's not even close. I mean, LeBron's unbelievable. LeBron's legacy, people keep saying to me, does he need to never another championship to cement his legacy? And I always say to them, what are you talking about? His legacy is cemented in two ways. Number one, he invented player empowerment. Now, other players before him had moments, but LeBron James is the reason that Paul George could switch teams twice and still, and it's okay, right? He's the reason Anthony Davis could leave New Orleans. He's the reason that Kawhi Leonard could go from San Antonio, go to Toronto and win a championship, and then mosey on to the LA Clippers. The players have all the power and all the leverage now, and they have one person to thank for that. And that's LeBron James. He and no one else has decided what will be next for him by player opt-outs and all these other things that really didn't exist back in the day when Jordan was around or Magic or Bird or any of those stars, Tim Duncan, any of them. And so that's number one. Number two is he has taken such a strong and admirable stand for the rights of black players. I can't breathe. You can't touch him on this. You can't touch him on this. He's been a powerful, convincing, passionate, consistent voice. And I give him a ton of credit for it.
And so when the pandemic shuts down the league in March, right, and the NBA starts forming the plan about the bubble mm-hmm. in Orlando, and there's this conversation that presaged the conversation that ended up happening last week, except it's Kyrie Irving mm-hmm. about whether playing basketball was even the right thing to do, given the possibility of distracting from the larger social movement. It seemed like LeBron was the one who turned that conversation back around. What was your sense of LeBron's role in getting everybody to go to the bubble in the first place?
No, I think you're correct. And you know, Kyrie's an easy target for lots of reasons. But, I mean, Kyrie was onto something, wasn't he? Because one of the things I point out to everybody was the day that the Lakers wore the Breonna Taylor hats, and I'm sure LeBron is the leader in that, the Portland Trailblazers had upset them in game one, and Dame Lillard had gone crazy. And he was trying to talk about Breonna Taylor.
Well, the same energy that we had on the floor is the same energy that we have towards having justice for Breonna Taylor and her family. And, you know, that's the energy that we bring to the game.
And all anybody wants to know is, are you in trouble? How amazing is Dame Lillard? So the real challenge now is going forward. You've promised, these owners have promised you, they're going to help you get this message out. Voting reform, set up voting booths in their arenas, put pressure on the police departments to change the way they do things. And the message has to keep going, keep going, keep going. Because what happens is we, after, I don't know, how many weeks have we been at this with the bubble? We see Black Lives Matter on the court. We're desensitized to it now. We're not stopping to think about what it means. The first time I saw it, I was like, wow. Right. And now it's like, oh yeah, there it is again. So this is the huge, huge moment that these players have. It's daunting. And LeBron is very much at the forefront of this.
So this notion of who has power among the players, Jackie, that's why I'm talking to you here today as well. Mm-hmm. This idea that LeBron James has this respect and commands this audience and is somebody who, if he says, we're hooping, everyone else is hooping, to paraphrase Patrick Beverley before the bubble restarted. There's also this kind of like Lion King dynamic mm-hmm. where it's LeBron. He's the strongest, most powerful, best of us. So, of course, he's going to have that power. But we're learning in the bubble that there are some people who don't necessarily see LeBron as somebody who always knows what's best for everybody at all times.
Right, right. And that did emerge. And Stephen A. Smith was the one that reported that. And I never, ever questioned Stephen A.'s sources. He is as plugged in to the NBA as any reporter I know. And what he was telling us was that a lot of the younger players felt that LeBron was speaking to them like they were beneath him. Does he really have my best interest at heart? Does he even care what I think? And that's what Stephen A. reported. So it's an interesting dynamic. I don't think the damage is permanent because I do think LeBron's on the right side of this. I think he's proven that time and time again with his voice, his actions, and also his charities and foundations. I think he's sort of the redoubtable king of this. I don't question him on it.
LeBron James is playing a bigger game than pretty much everybody else. And mm-hmm. it reminds me in that way of Michael Jordan, because they're not only competing for the championship this season, Jackie. They're competing for a certain immortality. They are shaping a legacy. LeBron James, whether you love him or hate him, find him sincere or find him less than that, it's very clear that he has an interest in shaping how he is understood, not just right now, but years and years from now. And I wonder if you sense that same instinct from Michael Jordan.
Oh, absolutely. Both of them as at the top of their game, which is, you know, Jordan, people say he's on the other side. I haven't seen it. So They're at the top of the game, but they're already 8 steps, 10 steps ahead of what's going to happen next for them. Is there any doubt in your mind, Pablo, that LeBron James is going to end up trying to become an NBA owner? There isn't in my mind.
Nope, not at all.
Here's the interesting thing, how you speak to these NBA owners. Think about it. They decide whether you're in or you're out. Michael Jordan, we're talking about him being a little too PC, if you will. Michael Jordan became an NBA owner without any trouble at all. And I feel like LeBron James would too, because I think he's earned it. I think he's earned that respect.
We're at this place where it seems to me like the only people that can really shape LeBron James and Michael Jordan are LeBron James and Michael Jordan, each other. It seems like this is an orbit. This is a universe in which they are these two suns rotating and affecting the gravitational pull, the force fields around the other. Where does this go, do you think? Does LeBron James end up being a figure greater than Michael Jordan when all is said and done?
That's a very good question. I think there's room in the universe for both of them. I don't think they are two stars that have to collide. Wow. I mean, both of them, I can't even imagine either one of them having a more profound impact in the here and now. That's the best way I can answer it. Both of them are so unflappable. And you know why? Because they have no doubt at all that they are the greatest of all time. I'm being truthful here. Does that make them arrogant? If you want to use that word, go right ahead. I don't think so. I mean, I was around Bill Russell a lot too, well after he played. I was too young to be around him when he was playing, other than, you know, sitting in the rafters at Boston Garden. But I've been around him a lot since then. And he has the same air about him. But the difference with him was, first of all, he never tried to monetize his likeness. Or look at most of those guys had to get summer jobs in the offseason because they didn't make enough playing in the NBA. So it's a completely different time frame. But his power felt the same to me. And talk about someone that didn't blink standing up for what he believed in and standing with Muhammad Ali and standing up to the NBA. My favorite story of all is when they went to go to a restaurant and the place wouldn't serve them because they were black. He took all five of them to the airport and said to Red, "We're out of here." And Red said, "Go home. I'll pay for the plane tickets. I understand." And so I find myself at times in awe of Bill Russell for the same reasons that LeBron and Michael Jordan pushed the needle for younger generations.
So I guess the question, Jackie, given this Mount Olympus that you've populated now with Michael Jordan and LeBron James and Bill Russell, does Bill Russell want to compete with Michael Jordan and LeBron James enough to film another sequel to Space Jam?
He does not. Bill Russell is, I'm going to venture to say that 11 and 13 years has cemented Mr. Russell's legacy to the point where he doesn't have to worry about Space Jam.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan. Could I have your your John Hancock?
What's going on here?
We need your help!
I do love Space Jam 1. I don't know what Space Jam 2 is going to be like, but my kids were young. Space Jam got me out a lot of deadlines, a lot of binds when kids were homesick or I got a call at 8 o'clock at night and, you know, we've just finished dinner and I'm trying to put the kids to bed. And Space Jam bailed me out a million times. So thank you, Space Jam.
Special delivery.
Together, they just might.
Best line ever in Space Jam, Pablo. He's Bill Murray, of course, is in the movie, and he's playing golf with Larry Bird. And they make it something about Larry Bird being white.
It's because I'm white, isn't it? No, Larry's white. So what? Larry's not white. Larry's clear.
He's clear.
Jackie McMullen, the Hall of Famer, we thank you for your clarity.
Thank you, my friend Pablo. I enjoyed it.
Next, a tribute to Chadwick Boseman, who entered our lives as Jackie Robinson and left as so much more.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. Baseball usually celebrates Jackie Robinson Day on April 15th, when Robinson broke baseball's color barrier in 1947. But our whole pandemic thing pushed this day of honor back all the way to August 28th, last Friday, which explains how the man who became famous for playing Jackie Robinson in the film 42 died on Jackie Robinson Day itself at age 43. We now know that Chadwick Boseman had been battling colon cancer for 4 years. It's a disease we didn't even know Boseman had because he didn't even want his friends to know, first off, and because he kept working. The actor first announced himself to Hollywood as Jackie Robinson 7 years ago, winning reviews that sound like scouting reports, with The New Yorker praising, quote, his ability to generate enormous power with minimal strain, end quote. But it was over these last 4 years, as his cancer escalated from stage three to finally stage four, that Boseman truly became world famous, making films so enormous that when this news broke, it felt like that world had stopped. Black Panther and those last two Avengers movies, Infinity War and Endgame, ranked 12th, 5th, and 1st respectively on the list of the highest grossing movies of all time. The statistics are a mind-blowing validation of Chadwick Boseman, a massive sports fan who was, in sports terms, this journeyman player when he became another barrier-breaking character, King T'Challa, the single most beloved black superhero ever, and the role that most reframed Boseman's life. Boseman's death, of course, is just the latest tragedy to befall America. We are battling twin pandemics, COVID and racism, and our country can't figure out how to reckon with the past or present or future of either. Everything basically feels like it's coming apart. But all that is precisely why the timing here felt so cinematically cruel and unusual, even during this most cruel and unusual year. The state of our union is actually the reason why, to me, the Black Panther dying felt like such a staggeringly national loss. Because as a nation, we don't just agree on less these days. We have less in common, period, in the first place. We don't read the same publications or follow the same people or listen to the same voices or watch the same shows for fun. Not anymore. But I did watch Chadwick Boseman's movies, and so did you. That statistic I mentioned before says a lot more about us than it does about him. Boseman was a terrific actor across genres, but when it comes to film, we are a nation that is overwhelmingly obsessed with comic books, with escaping to a universe where good can and really does triumph over evil. And now the first of those Marvel characters is gone in real life, robbing us of so much of what our country is longing for right now. A sequel, a common experience, and a hero. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.